Nancy Peruzzo on November 27th, 2013, and today's interview is taking place in St. James area of Winnipeg, and I'll have the person that I'm interviewing today introduce himself and his connection to the grain industry.
Well, my name is Arnold Affleck. I was in the grain industry, starting with Grain Insurance and Guarantee in 1970, retiring in 1993, and we insured initially country grain elevators in Western Canada and terminals in Thunder Bay as a participant, and that was about it for at this stage.
Okay, great. Several years back, I learned of the existence of specialized insurance for the grain trade, and
sure.
So I've been trying to track down someone such as you to learn more about it. Now, before we went on tape, you said you grew up in Manitoba. Did you grow up in rural Manitoba?
Yes, in Killarney, Manitoba.
Oh, okay. So on a farm or?
No, in the town.
Yeah.
And my mother was widowed. I was the youngest in the family. My brothers and sister, of course, had moved away. So when I graduated from high school, my mother and I moved to Winnipeg. And that was the start of it.
Yeah.
Then I started in the insurance business.
At that time, you were working for what company when you first started?
The North British and Mercantile.
Oh, okay.
And after the merger with Commercial Union is when I got transferred to St. John.
Okay, just a sec. Now, so you were transferred to St. John, but you spent most of your career related to the grain industry in Winnipeg. So how did you get back? Did you get back here? What happened?
Well, I came back as the executive assistant to the president until he retired, and then I succeeded him. And it was quite a shock because at that time, up to that time, the principal shareholder was Federal Grain, about 50% of the shares of the company. They sold out to the pools, and that put, all of a sudden, our business was cut in half. And it's interesting because at that time I'd been working on expansion plans, and they'd always be, well, let's have another study, let's have another study. And of course, this came from Federal. They knew what they were negotiating with the pools. So then it enables us to work on expansion plans. And we extended from the grain business to try to do a specialized thing because we had this inspection unit. And we got into retail store chains. We got into churches. We got into funeral parlors. And I know some of my peers and competitors would say, geez, Affleck, do you know what you're doing? I mean, you're cutting this and cutting that. We're making money all the time because of our inspection service. And that was carried over from the grain business because in the going back in the history of that, which this company was formed in 1920, prior to that, the insurance companies were charging exorbitant premiums because the grain companies were having elevators burn right and left. So at that point, they decided to form their own company, and that's when the inspection unit was formed, and that worked out very well. And of course, things have changed in the business since that time. And when I came there in 1970, there were something like 4,200 primary grain elevators in Western Canada. Now there's probably about 500 or 600, if that. So this company, Grain Insurance, just changed its name, because the grain business was represented such a small portion of its total. So.
I'm going to go back because in the last couple of minutes, there's all kinds of stuff that you've sort of tossed out that I'd like a bit more information on. So first of all, I'd started asking the question of how you got back from St. John, New Brunswick, to Winnipeg. So what was the company that you went to St. John with?
Commercial Union.
Commercial Union, and then a job came up in a different company,
No, it's Green Insurance.
just called Green Insurance, or did it
Well,
have a...
Green Insurance and Guarantee.
Okay.
And that's when I got the call saying, would I be interested? Because they were looking for a replacement for the president.
And who was the president at that time, do you know?
Jack Timmerman.
Ah, okay, yes.
Here is a man, 104 years of age, and it's a good life he leads, I guess. He was swimming and swimming competitively until about 3 years ago, and the doctor told him to quit. He says, "You already have four world records. What are you expecting now?" He's still going strong.
So in 1970, then you replaced him.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I replaced him in 74 when he retired.
Oh, okay. Now, you mentioned that that company was formed in 1920
Yes.
exclusively to insure
Just the Country Grain Elevators and
Country Grain
Shareholders.
Elevators.
That's all it did. Company Grain Elevators and surety bonds and, of course, grain stocks for the shareholder companies. At that time, there was something like about 34, 35 shareholder companies, and now I think there's four. So that's the way
Yeah,
amalgamations have gone.
that's right. So let's go back to those early days when you first started. I'd asked you a question at the beginning of the tape whether you'd grown up on a farm, and you said no. You were in the town of Killarney. So once you took this job with the Grain Insurance and Guarantee Company, what did that job entail before you took over for Mr. Timmerman? What were you doing?
I was the branch superintendent of the company in St. John,
Okay.
and I was slated to take over the branch manager's job in a couple of years.
Okay, but you came back here instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you came back here, did you come back into the senior management job of the Grain Insurance and Guarantee Company?
Yes.
Okay. What did the office look like at that time? Numbers of employees? You mentioned various
Well,
divisions.
there was probably about, maybe 30, but that was mostly the Affiliated Inspection Bureau, which was our inspection arm, and that was, we had something like 12 field inspectors, and of course the office staff to administer. We had about eight electricians who did electrical inspections and also work on elevators. So the grain trade used our electrical department for their construction work
Did they?
at that time.
Wow.
And then we disbanded the electrical division because of the elevators being reduced in number and the grain companies wanting to use local contractors because it was handier, probably cheaper in the long run too.
Yeah. Tell me more about the inspection department. What specifically did they do?
Okay, well, first of all, I guess just about every inspector had been an elevator insurance manager prior. And
And
they,
now an elevator insurance.
no, an elevator manager. And so they would do about four physical risk inspections a year. And they would, do a very thorough job. And we had a demerit system for elevator managers. And so if things were wrong, they would get demerited. And we would do personal inspections on them too, as to what their drinking habits were, etc.
Really?
Oh, sure. go around. Any new elevator manager, when the bond application came in, they would go and they would do and scour the neighborhood, see friends, and contact the references. And so, of course, drinking in elevators was strictly taboo. And so, no, that worked out extremely well.
Now, you said they did four inspections a year. Was that four inspections of every elevator?
Yes.
And you started to talk about how number the number of elevators when you first started.
Yeah, that's right. There was, well, in the whole system is about 4,200. We insured about half of those. And of course, in half of those was Federal Grain. When they sold out, boy, that was decimating.
That was a big
Yeah.
item. So, you mentioned the pools. Did they have their own insurance arm then?
Yes, they did. Pool, it's called the Pool Insurance Company. I think it's gone kaput now, but
Yeah. Were they headquartered
Winnipeg.
in Winnipeg as
Yes.
well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you know who ran that
Oh yeah, we're
operation?
good friends.
And he's still around too?
Gee, I don't know. It goes
Yeah.
back over the years.
What was his name?
I can't even remember now.
Yeah.
It goes
You're like
back.
me, not the names
It
don't
goes
come.
back so long.
Yeah, that's right. It does go back
Yeah.
so long. Now, these pool elevator guys, the managers who became your inspectors, did you recruit them or did they?
Yeah, we would I can't remember just exactly how we went about it. I guess a lot was word of mouth and so on. And so we would have to have one, or somebody would retire, and we'd have to go out and find another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would they be mostly people that had retired from the grain
No, no,
elevator
no, no,
manager
no.
job?
No,
Nope.
these were very active people, maybe in their 30s, 40s, when we hired them.
Yeah. Did you ever go out on inspections?
Oh, sure.
So tell me how an inspection worked, the physical
Well,
inspection.
okay, when I first came to Grain, I said, I'd like to find out what makes this place tick. So I went out and I would go out with one of the, go out, out to an elevator, and I'd sit there for a day and see what went on and have a good conversation with the elevator manager, and he'd explain how they operated, what how they did this, how they did that, and the rest of it. So I got a pretty good feel of what made the elevator system work and what went on. So,
Now, did the inspectors have to get down and dirty, like crawl
oh,
into
you bet,
spots? So,
yeah.
what can you tell me about that?
Well, you'd have to go down in what we called the boot, which was down the bottom, and then you go up to the top. And I can remember after being out for 2 or 3 days in one of these things, and I came home, and here I had the coveralls on and so on. And one of my kids said, "What's this dad? I mean, he was working before, and what's he doing with this?"
From your suit to
Yeah,
the.
but no, it was a good experience.
Yeah. What did you learn about the operation of those elevators? Because you wouldn't have been familiar with them, not being a farm guy.
Well, of course, in the country, you see what's going on and so on. Although I remember as a kid, I'd be visiting my uncles, and my cousin, who was older than I was, he would be driving the grain truck, and I'd go with him to the elevator and so on. I was just a kid at the time, but I remember going and getting that. And of course, it was a team of horses, too, that they took the thing.
Oh, right. Back in the 30s, I would guess, eh?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, no. So anyway, in the elevator, you see the truck comes in, what transpires. You take the weights, you take the grade, you tell the farmer what you've graded it at, and what your dockage is going to be, and then after you weight it, you give them a grain ticket, which is like cash. So.
So what hazards were the inspectors looking for in the country elevators?
Cleanliness, wiring, and the just overall eliminating any hazards that they might see. And it used to be a joke that an inspector would be going down the line, and they said, if you were down there, you'd see dust flying out of the elevators. Because they heard the inspector was coming.
So their housekeeping improved.
Yeah. So our approach was, well, it's great, it'd be getting done.
Yeah. Now, did you find there was quite a difference in standards of various... was it companies or managers that really determined the standards?
It was a we determined what we knew what their standards were, and they were complied with. You know, it wasn't very often that someone got demerited, and the elevator managers were quite conscious of it because any demerits reflected in their bonus.
Okay.
So,
system.
And the companies, you know, paid attention to that.
Yeah. As far as the other investigation, the sort of personal investigation, how did people react when, both the people being investigated and also the people when you go out and check with neighbors? Sort of a touchy situation?
I don't think so, because... You know, small communities, you know, you're pretty subtle about it. You know, you say to somebody, well, you know, Harry so-and-so, and, oh, yeah, and, you know, it may touch on what his drinking habits may be or anything else. And by and large, they all came through very highly regarded.
Ever any incidents that you recall that didn't work out so well? That
not that I'm aware of.
No, that no. Somebody had to actually be dismissed because of.
I don't think so.
No. Now
the grain companies were pretty careful in who they hired as well. I mean, they're the ones that did the hiring. And when we came on the scene after we got the bond application, was to check to see what the background was. That's all.
Now, this bond that you mentioned, the Canadian Grain Commission required companies to be elevators to be licensed.
That's right.
So, how did your work overlap with theirs in some way?
Well, not really, because we issued those bonds. And they, you know, it was money from heaven, because if companies did something wrong and we had to pay, we could go back and claim from the grain company. And their financial situation was such that was a no-brainer. So.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in your introduction that you did the inspections on the prairie elevators, which were mainly wooden structures, but you also did inspections on the terminals.
We didn't do the terminals, no.
No?
Now, when you got to the terminals, that was that's a pretty big thing, you know, back in that time anyway. And grain insurance didn't participate in the terminals at Thunder Bay, although we had another subsidiary called Grain Insurance Brokers. And we placed the insurance with the private insurance businesses and insurance companies. And it wasn't until latterly that grain insurance started to insure the terminals. And now I find that the company insures the Richardsons, Parrish and Heimbecker, Patterson's, I don't know what else, and they insure them 100% with the reinsurance. But it's interesting in that respect, because I recall when we were trying to place reinsurance on the terminal elevators, and we were having some difficulty because I was thinking of Lloyd's of London now, we're acquainting it with the American system. And at that time, the American grain trade did not have a very good experience with and they're having explosions. And I was able to convince the Lloyd's brokers that Canada has clean grain. The Americans can sell dirt to the elevator, whereas we have a cleaning system, and what we deliver to the terminals and what they export is clean grain.
And you managed to convince them?
Yes.
And what difference did that make? The fact that Lloyd was able to...
It just meant that we got the coverage and the terms better.
Mm. Not a bad thing.
Yeah.
How costly was insurance?
It's not costly, no. I can't remember what the rates are, but the rate on grain terminals is not high. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, other than explosions, like fire wouldn't be too much of an issue because unless it was...
To my knowledge, there's only been one explosion, and that was at the Patterson Elevator in 1954, I think. And that, it wasn't earth-shattering, but it was an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
It ran into some hundreds of thousands of dollars, but that was it.
Actually, there were two others previous to that, 1945 and 1952, but they were Saskatchewan Wheat Pool elevators, so they would have had to, and those were deadly. They lost, I think, in total maybe 30 people.
Yeah.
Which is pretty...
That's right.
Yeah. Before the dust control situation.
Well, you bet.
Yeah. Over your career, now you started in 1970, which in my estimate is, just recent, recently. Dust control, what was it like then, and did it change at all over your time, or had they already really gotten pretty good control of it?
I think there was no changes, to my knowledge anyway.
Yeah. So the grain insurance brokers, let me just see if I've got this straight. So the grain insurance brokers that handled the terminal elevators, they would... shop around to place the insurance on the terminals with various
general insurance business
company in the private.
Yeah.
So did certain private companies specialize in terminal elevators, or
the only ones that I know of were the Parrish and Heinbecker, Richardson's, Patterson's. I don't think the other ones at that time had terminal elevators.
No, there weren't.
No.
By that time, there weren't very many.
That's right. And of course, the rest were the pools, mm-hmm. United Grain Growers.
Yeah. This is a question that might be relatively difficult to answer, given how far back I'm asking you to go. Yeah. But you had said... That was it. 34 companies, did you say, or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you remember some of the names of the companies that were functioning when you first started?
Oh gosh, they weren't there when I started. We were down to the five or six.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Yeah, but this is when the company was formed in 1920.
Oh, okay.
They had the 30 some private grain companies.
Right.
And all with elevators, and they got through amalgamations. It went. Like Interocean, they amalgamated in the 70s with like Richardson's. And Parrish and Heinbecker took over Ellison's. And maybe there's a few others too, but that cut it down.
Considerably, but the federal sale to the pool, even when I think of the terminal elevators in Thunder Bay,
yeah.
That really took over a number of elevators all built by different companies. And
I remember Timmerman was beside himself when that happened. He said to me, "I would never have brought you here if I thought this was going to happen. I said, this is now an opportunity. We can expand into other areas. So that's what we did.
Yeah. Good thinking.
Yeah.
Worked out well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the Grain Insurance and Guarantee Company, I think it did just change its name, did it not?
To Windward.
To Windward, okay. This is 25. And was that just like within the last couple of years?
In May.
In May of this, yeah, because I Googled and looked at. Windward, W-A-R-D?
W-Y-N-W-A-R-D.
Yeah. I have a question about the kinds of records that were kept. Because oftentimes what we find, we're especially interested in terminal elevators.
Yeah.
And we like to see where, who owned what when, you know, who sold to whom.
Yeah.
And so I would think every time there was a turnover, there would be some kind of record change in at the insurance level. What kind of, did you keep in archives? Did all the papers get tossed?
Oh, at one time, I guess they did, but to my knowledge, nothing's been done in years. And I used to have a monthly letter, and it was mainly for, you know, field staff and so on, so they knew what was going on. And my successor cut it out. So
you didn't keep any copies of your for yourself?
No.
Aw, darn.
Is this true? Never thought of that.
Yeah. Did they keep the same offices, or did they move around? Because that's often what happens, is once they move, they chuck anything that they think is not.
No, they're still, no, they're in the same office in the Grain Exchange building.
Are they?
They were, until when? Maybe 10, 12 years ago, they moved to the Richardson building.
So they probably just emptied the files and tossed out your newsletters.
I think so.
Oh, well, that's too bad.
It didn't say a heck of a lot. It was,
it's a history.
You know, what we had in there is called close calls, and we would record what were close calls that didn't end up being a loss. But
So what would be some examples of close calls related to the elevators?
Well, the it could be all of a sudden they found a, you know, fire starting and able to put it out, this sort of thing. But an interesting part of this whole thing is we were having difficulty with welding losses and not the proper precautions taken in welding. So I proposed a suggestion that if they had a welding fire from welding, there would be no insurance coverage. I knew that wouldn't wash, but it stirred the pot. So I amended it and said, okay, if there's a loss from welding, we will impose a $500,000 deductible. And that went over. And one of the things, the criteria we had was, if they're doing welding, they had to have the supervision of one of our inspectors. And the Cargill, who was at that time, still are, I guess. I mean, we are Cargill. We do what we want. Nobody tells us what to do. And so this came across from Cargill operating people. And fortunately, one of the directors was the Cargill VP of Finance, and he said, that's all very fine, but he says, you're the ones that have been causing all the welding fires. So, which was true.
Mm-hmm.
It came from the welding construction, the Cargill construction people. So that's just an interesting side.
Yeah, yeah. So the board of directors then was made up of the representatives from the various grain companies?
That's right.
So can you think of who was on your board when you were...
Well, when I first joined, it was Cy Leach, who was the chairman, And of course, it was federal. George Sellers was the vice chairman. He was just federal. And there was Heffelfinger, National Grain before Cargill. Of course, Bill Parrish, Patterson. What the heck was his name? I can't remember now.
John? But there were two of them, or Don. It was either John or Don.
It was Don. He was the Winnipeg guy. And then I thought it was time to bring, expanding, to bring in an outside director. So I brought in Laurie Pollard. But and then when I, after, when I took over, just after I took over, Bill Parrish became the chairman.
What was the thought behind the bringing in the person from outside the industry?
Well, I thought it'd be nice to, seeing as we're expanding outside, to have a little something, you could bring something in from others in the grain trade. And he was a good director. So, and I don't know to this day, I don't know who the board is. Nobody publishes anything anymore.
You've noticed.
Yeah. And so I guess I can quit. Mind you, I'm still on the pension committee. The province of Manitoba brought in legislation that you had to have a pension committee. Apparently the company said, well, we're federally licensed, we shouldn't have to. I said, doesn't matter, you have to. So they you had to have somebody from outside, so they... I was voted from the retired employees to be their rep. And then there was an employee who was voted on by other employees. And there's a someone from the company, the board. And so that's the pension committee.
Mm. Now, the makeup of the board of directors were competitors.
That's right.
So how did that friendly. How did that work?
The grain trade is very friendly, and same as the insurance business. You know, we would have an insurance managers meeting once a month, and we would have very frank discussion, and we'd say, "You have to watch such and such a broker because he's such and such. You got to." And this is what's going on here, what's going on there. Pick each other's brains, and we're all very friendly. And we'd have a couple of golf tournaments a year and so on. So, and the grain trade is the same way. You know, they would all congregate in the Moose Trap Club for coffee in the mornings. And so, no, it was quite a close group.
Were you part of the Moose Trap Club?
No.
No?
I was invited, but I didn't go.
Yeah. What kinds of issues did the board have to deal with, or was it just pretty much, well, let's see if things are going along smoothly?
Yeah. Investment portfolio.
Oh, tell me more about that.
Well, we had a chap from Richardson's who was very astute as an investor. And so... We did, our investment portfolio was extremely well under his guidance. And he had a very simple formula, 50% equities, 50% bonds. And the equity side, it would be 25% preferreds, 25% commons. On the bond side, it would be 25% government bonds, 25% corporate bonds. And it worked out very well. And it was there in the market quite well.
During your time, which was 70 to 93, went through a pretty good time for investment returns.
That's right.
So was there ever any issue with that? Or I'm thinking now, someone I knew worked for the Canadian Workers' Compensation Board, and they, of course, had the same kind of thing where they have a portfolio, and they, you know, there were some pretty scary times. Was it fairly steady and just a nice
it was good. It was
pleasant
steady,
bulge?
It was steady, yeah. As I say, this guy from Richardson's, he studied this investment scene, and I remember my secretary took some papers over to his house to be signed, and there he was at the kitchen table, and he's surrounded by investment stuff. That was his...
Yeah. What was his name? He deserves to be to get credit, if you can remember his name.
I know his name so well. Norm.
It'll pop into your head some point, so just not worry about it. What size portfolio were you?
At that time, it was about $5 million. It's growing and growing and growing since then. Mm.
And how was the... was that profit sort of used to pay out claims, or was there... Was there a profit paid out, and if it was paid out, how did they pay it out?
We paid out very good dividends, and that was from operations, not from the investment side, but just from operations. And with the exception of 1 or 2 years, we always had very good underwriting profits. We lost, I guess we lost $100,000 one year.
Which in the overall scheme of things is pretty small.
And that's right. And another year we lost a little bit more, but that was it. Always had very good underwriting profits. And I had the theory that let's not get hung up on the expense ratio. Let's get hung up on losses. And so we spent a lot of money on inspections, but it paid off. And the same thing when we went into the retail store, the churches, and so on, we had the inspection system going.
Mm. Now, when you had, I don't think I've asked this question, when you had brokers, like the broker arm, Gray Insurance Brokers, did your inspection staff still do the inspections on the terminals, or was that somebody else's responsibility?
We never did the terminals.
No.
The Canadian Underwriters Association did that.
Oh, did they? And do they have an office here?
No longer. I think it's faded. Huh.
Is there somebody from your era who was working there who's still around?
Not really.
No.
Our VP of finance just retired last year, but you know, I hired him in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. The only other person may be Alan McLeod. He used to be our chief inspector. And I don't know what the state of his health is these days either.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. When you say Canadian Underwriters Association is...
That was a member of the... what we call the board companies, the stock companies.
So if I were to look them up on Google, I might be able to trace.
I don't think it exists.
It's even around anymore.
I think they now have the Insurers Advisory Organization, which is an offshoot.
Oh, okay.
And that's all it is for members. But everybody's gone its own way. See, the Canadian Underwriters Association, going back initially, they set rates for the member companies, and you had to follow those. And my first job was with the Western Canada Insurance Underwriters Association, and the company submitted copies of their policies for approval. I mean, that years ago. Now everybody does their own thing.
Yeah.
But the insurer's advisory organization is there to give them information to help them, and then take it from there.
Mm-hmm. What impact did that sort of the Canadian underwriters stating rates?
Yeah.
Like, was there any opposition on the part of the people buying insurance that
Well, they could always go to the mutuals if they wanted to.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it didn't.
So there was competition. Yeah.
But you know,
there somewhere.
You go back, there were, I think, 300 and some insurance companies, general insurance companies, doing business in Canada, and now they're again a fraction of that.
Yeah.
You know, in Winnipeg here, we would have, oh, maybe a dozen or more branch offices. I think there's two or three now.
Hmm. Yeah. I sort of went off on a tangent, but coming back to the dividends that were paid out, were the, it wasn't a public share, or the dividends went to the grain companies who...
Shareholder companies.
Yeah, which were essentially at that time
the
grain companies.
It's still that way.
Oh, okay. Even with the change of name?
Oh, yeah, with the change of name, they're still the shareholders.
Yeah.
The reason for the change of name was because the grain side of the operation is now down to a very small proportion, considering it started out as being 100%.
Well, and considering they went from...
Well, you look at...
Like 6,000... Maybe at the height of the time of the prairie elevators down to, I think, 200 or 300 now.
Oh, that's right. It's a fraction.
Yeah. And that was happening, I guess, gradually throughout your time. So as that was decreasing, you were building the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were there many losses related to the prairie elevators?
There, laterally, no. We'd have, my God, if we had one a year, it was an exception.
Hmm.
And I remember the biggest one we had was up at Peace River, and that would have been, I don't know, I guess the 80s. It was our first $1 million loss in the country grain elevator system.
Wow.
I went up there to see what it was all about. But, you know, other than that, it was a few hundred thousand.
And why such a high loss there? Was it not the typical wooden elevator?
It was a good-sized elevator. It was full. And but it's interesting. This happened in January. And as I say, I was up there, and of course you try to get local people to salvage the grain. And there was a minimum security prison up there, and the fire chief was a deputy warden at this. So he said, look, I can get you all the help you want. And so he said, these guys will do anything, it doesn't matter how cold it is, to get out of that place. And they were... You know, just so I remember they're sitting around having coffee one day, and one said to the other, Harry, if you ever get me involved in another fight again, I'm going to throttle you. That's the type of things that are in there for.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me a bit more about the recovery. Of product, how you said you usually use local people, but what? Let's say an incident occurs.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, the first thing, of course, the fire department responds, and you know it is going to be a total loss. So, we would try to convince them to save their water for adjoining properties. Let this thing burn, because we don't want all that water spoiling the grain. We want to salvage it. And of course, it burned around the grain, so we'd get in there and salvage the grain as much as we could. and we'd get a pretty good price for the salvage.
So smoke damage an issue then?
Well,
With grain
of course, it
or?
was salvage grain. And so you give somebody maybe a feedlot or whoever it was who would buy the, like you couldn't ship it, you couldn't export it, but it had a value.
Who would establish the value? Who, like, what kind of
Oh, it was
technical person would
just a
establish?
bid.
Oh, just a bid.
Just a bid.
Okay. And were there companies or individuals that
There was
sort of followed the disaster from disaster to bid?
a guy south of here who used to like to get the salvage grain. And he's usually the best. So I mean that was just to mitigate the loss. So.
And so what kind of equipment did he use? Nothing fancy?
Oh,
People with
he.
shovels or
No, not really. He would buy it. Because we would salvage it. Well, of course, let's say we would supervise the salvage by buying local, hiring local people, people with machinery, people with labor, whatever the case may be.
So how what happens? The notice comes in that there's been an incident. And then take it through sort of the technical steps of.
We first of all, you'd hear about the fire. First thing we'd do is dispatch the local inspector up there to see what's going on, and then he would be there to do something, supervise the salvage operation.
And what would the did you have to locate other space for the salvaged material, or was it just put on the ground, or?
Oh, it'd be taken out and put on the ground until you get it into some kind of conveyance to get it out of there.
And the conveyance would be supplied by the person who bid?
Yeah, it'd be trucks or whatever, sure.
Yeah, so you didn't have to
No.
locate the put the
No.
grain elsewhere
No.
while you found somebody to
That's
buy
right.
it. Oh, well, that's good.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Was there a time of year more than another where you could expect to have fires?
I guess not really. One of the things that they had earlier on was, of course, lightning fires. Now, we had very stringent restrictions as to how lightning rod should be installed, and this was another part of the inspection. And we would hire university students in the summertime to go and either install or improve the lightning system. But that's a very important part of it.
So you have a lightning rod. What else is part of the system?
Well, that's if the lightning rod's up there, that gets the if it's installed properly.
Mm.
Now, we had an abandoned elevator in Alberta, and thieves came and stripped the copper off the system because of the price of copper. Eventually, it burned down, but that was no loss. It was an abandoned elevator anyway.
So there's a lightning rod that goes up and then wires to the ground.
That's right, and it's grounded, yeah.
Okay. There was actually a lightning strike in Thunder Bay this year that
Yeah.
hit smokestack. It was no longer functioning in the elevator, but
Yeah.
it was had been standing there for 100 years.
Yeah.
And I sure wish they had had the lightning rod on it,
Yeah.
because it just demolished it and they had
Yeah.
to take it all down. Yeah.
So really, I can't think of any particular time of the year. Because latterly, the incidence of an elevator fire was hardly ever happened.
Yeah.
Compared to, a million years earlier, when they had the old gas-driven machinery, that's when you had the fires. When electricity came in, that took away that hazard. That was a big thing.
Yeah, and that was all taken,
Yeah.
had taken place before you
That's
came into
right.
the business.
Yeah.
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 Did Mr. Timmerman ever talk of stories that about his early days and what differences there was in the industry versus
Oh yeah.
when you came in?
He was he started in the grain business as he was an elevator manager, and he came into the organization and became manager of the Affiliate Inspection Bureau. And
the what inspection bureau?
The Affiliate Inspection Bureau. That was the subsidiary, our inspection.
Oh, okay. So it had a name.
And he was the one that really established that and got it going, and he formed the electrical department and so on. So when the president of the company was killed in an air crash near Canada thing, that would have been back in 1950, early 50s. They made him the president or general manager of Grain Insurance and Guarantee. And he didn't know anything about the insurance side. But we had Jim Crome, who was the insurance man, really, and he ran Grain Insurance Brokers. So he had to rely on him for the grain side of it. But he learned fast, and then, of course, when I came in, I was the one that had the insurance background. So I had a very good relationship. We thought along the same lines, and it worked out well.
Good. Good. Nice to work at a place where people like each other and can work well together.
Well, you know, it's great to have a place that you like to go to work.
Yes.
I can't think of how awful it must be when you hated to go there every day. You get up and say, oh, God, I have to go to that place.
I think it takes a toll on your health.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah. So have you pretty much talked about all of the changes that occurred over the time you were there?
No, not really, no.
No? So?
I don't see this. People that I was working with, they retired now. There's only one person left in the organization that goes back to, other than, okay, so we bought an agency and in 1998 or something. So one of those individuals is there now. She serves on the pension committee too.
Ah, okay. Yes.
And then we bought them, and the man who headed that, he became my successor.
And you bought them for any particular reason, or did they specialize in anything?
Yeah, they did. They specialized in insuring carnivals.
Well, that's an unusual one.
They had an inspector for that too. He went around and he did the inspections. And there again, that's something everybody avoided. So, and another thing we did was mobile homes. Nobody wanted mobile homes, and they were doing a good job of that. So,
you good at identifying niche markets.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, and recognizing they weren't, shouldn't have been avoided as most companies did.
Yeah.
Well, the unknown, right?
Yeah.
Just not.
But you're going to go into a big way. You can't dabble.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the funeral parlors was one that you said that that you worked with. Well, that was a good pick.
But the other thing, one of the first things we got into was churches. And I was approached by a broker in Saskatoon. And we were doing something else, a store thing. And he said, what about churches? I said, no way we touch churches. So he said, well, will you listen to me? I said, of course. So he had a program for the Lutheran churches in Canada. When he was through, I said, okay. That started it all. We went into a whole bunch of denominations. And the one thing that we didn't do were Roman Catholic, Anglican, or United Churches, because they had the old cathedral-type buildings, and the Lutherans and the Apostolic and all these others, they had the nice, new, modern little churches. And some of my competitors say, Affleck insuring churches. Nobody insures churches.
Well, and probably those other churches were the ones that tended to hang around, because the major congregations have been shutting down a lot of churches.
That's right, and they're the ones that had these big old cathedral type churches, old.
Yeah. What would you describe as major challenges that you had over your time?
Oh gosh. I guess the first one was after the federal grain thing is to where do we go from here? And how do we get out of this mess? I guess that's the main one. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah. How was that? How did you approach that? Like, what was sort of, did you have a business plan to say, oops, we got a real problem here? And, or.
Well, I had plans to expand, and they would shut it off until after the federal thing became a reality, that the other directors were prepared to have us go and expand.
Yeah.
So that was it.
You mentioned a member, your members of the board, and one of the persons, the people that you mentioned was Sellers,
Yes.
right? Are there any members of that family still around? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. We've tracked down, well, went and interviewed Stuart Searle down in Georgia, I
Is
guess.
that where he is now?
Yes, and so I felt, and we also interviewed, there were the Searles, and then who was the other family? Lynch.
Leach?
Leach,
Yeah.
and interviewed Mr. Leach here too,
Oh,
so we were
Gus.
able to track them down, but we
Who got
hadn't,
Gus Leach?
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but we've not been able to track down any of the Sellers family,
Oh, I
so
don't think
I
there's
would,
any here.
yeah, like to get
He
a
was,
bit of their
I
history.
liked him. He was a good guy.
Yeah.
Boy, was he ever right on. He was so astute that I admired him from
Yeah.
sort.
What were some indications, would you say, that you said, ooh, that guy knows what he's doing?
Well, he could just seem to hit on something, it'd be at a board meeting and he'd cut through the ice and so.
Just very, the kind of person that there's a lot of discussion, they can come up with two sentences that sort of clarifies the whole thing.
Yeah,
That kind of guy.
that's right. And of course, he did extremely well. He pioneered it out in the oil business in Alberta, and everything he touched seemed to work out.
Who was on your board from Richardson's, or was there anyone?
That was I'm trying to think of his name now, too.
But not somebody from the Richardson family, so not
No,
George
no,
Richardson, someone in
no,
the Pioneer, probably.
no.
Pioneer
Well,
division.
the one that was there initially was oh God, I'm trying to think of his name too. Anyway, he was had been George Richardson's, go back to the original,
Ah.
his secretary. And so they were looking for someone to take over the grain operation. And he said, I would like the job. So he was given it. And he was a very astute in investments. And he also was ahead of the game when it came to the elevator system in the country. As an example, World War II came along. And he said, we are going to have a grain storage problem. He was the first to start building annexes. And but it's an interesting sidelight to him. When I was being interviewed, he was the chairman. And Cy Leach said, tell me, Mr. Affleck, what have you been doing in as far as community activities. So I listed a few and I said, but quite frankly, most of the things I've been doing have been for selfish reasons. And I thought, that'll get things I can get out of here. So this guy spoke up and he said, I see what Mr. Affleck's been doing. He hasn't had time for that kind of nonsense. And he had two interests in life, apparently, and that was grain insurance and the Richardson Grain Trade. So I thought, so then the other question was, why do you want to come back to Winnipeg? I said, I don't necessarily, but I'll go anywhere if the money's right. And I thought, well, I've killed this thing and get out of here.
They appreciated your honesty. Anything else about wartime storage? I have a particular interest in it because when we lived in Winnipeg between 1973 and 2000, we lived in Wildwood Park, and I did a history on Wildwood Park along with other members of the community. And the story was that Mr. Bird, Bird Construction, had purchased lumber from the grain storage that was built in the terminal elevator.
Wouldn't surprise me, yeah.
So I've sort of been trying to track down how I can find out, you know, how the elevator sold off the, you know, the excess lumber once the storage crisis was gone.
I have no idea.
Yeah. These little stories.
Yeah.
Any other stories you'd like to...
I think that's about it. Yeah.
Question I ask is, Canada has been pretty successful as a grain trader, international grain trader. Agree with that one?
Yes.
Yes. When you think about your part in the complex that is the grain industry, yeah, how would you say that your business, your part in it, contributed to Canada's success in the grain trade?
Stability. You know, we gave stability to, as far as an insurance market was concerned, which doesn't exist all the time in other businesses or other jurisdictions. Because of, you know, the grain companies themselves saw that, you know, when they formed their company. And, you know, the pools followed suit.
So your operation was in, your operation was in existence before the pools started up, really.
That's right.
Yeah. If, what was the, what was the reason for the private companies coming together? Could they not have insured themselves?
At that time, no, they couldn't, because now we've got into companies forming a captive, and, you know, domiciled in Bermuda or someplace. And that's what Cargill has down in the States. They have their own, they have a captive insurance company, and it does all their American business. Now, if they wanted to come to Canada with it, they'd have to be licensed and so on. So they were quite happy with the country elevator system and happy to be all part of it, because they took over from National Grain, which had that. And so we fronted for their captive on their Canadian operation, I think in their eastern terminals and other businesses that they have. And we fronted for them for a fee. And so that gave them the entree.
So they weren't on the board? They didn't have, did they have a member on your board?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, after Cargill bought National Grain, and of course they took over, and I came across their president out skiing in Jasper, and I said, do you realize that with your purchase of National Grain, you just bought 17% interest in our company?
And that's a bonus.
So, and of course, they had a director.
So would there be much difference then between like you have, I should ask this question. When the company was first set up back in 1920, was it set up under in the same what's the word I'm looking for? Was it a single ownership company, or was it set up as what amounts to sort of a cooperative of
It
private?
was set up as a shareholder company, but it was managed by an outside agency at that time. And that went on for a number of years until the mid-30s when they decided that they would run their own operation. So they hired a president and a vice president from this agency to run the new company
So,
under a different administration.
so when it was first set up then, was it set up by a conglomerate of grain companies?
Oh yeah, because here they were, they're all suffering from trying to get insurance paying exorbitant premiums. So they all jumped on board with the idea they all get together and now who spawned the idea, I have no idea.
And then, sorry, I was thinking about the question. So you said in the 1930s, because of all of the company collapses, I guess, what was the change there?
It was just that they set up their own administration. They took
Ah.
because they hired an outside agency before as a management company, and this is their own. But they hired these two individuals, and I go back in the records. The manager was hired for $15,000, and the assistant for $7,500. And so some of the young people say, "My God." I said, "Do you realize at that time you could buy a nice house in River Heights for $5,000?" So it's all relative.
A very nice house for that if you're
Yeah.
looking at the 1930s. I mean, yeah. Wow.
Cy Leach's house on Wellington Crescent was built in the 1930s for $75,000. And that, of course, in the millions now.
Yeah, quite amazing. The beautiful houses.
That's right.
Yeah. Question for you. When you think back on your career with the grain insurance company, what brings you the most satisfaction? What are you most proud of?
Of the constant years of profit and growth.
And given what you've said, without decisions you made, that growth and profit was not a guarantee because of what was happening in the industry. That it,
Well, we went through some, the industry went through some pretty tough years. I'm talking about the insurance industry. And and so we went through it unscathed. So that was good.
Great. I'm just going to put this on pause now because I left my questions over there. One other thing before ending the interview. In the letter that you received, we noted that we were trying to establish a grain industry activity center in Thunder Bay to recognize the importance of the industry to Canada, past and present. The insurance area is sort of not something that people would necessarily would not pop to mind immediately when they're thinking about the grain
I wouldn't
industry.
think so. It's just a housekeeping thing.
Yeah, pretty important. Is there anything that can be featured that you can think of if such a center comes about to.
I can't think of anything specifically, no, that
Yeah.
would be of any great interest.
Yeah. Hard. Very important piece,
Well,
but very difficult to
that's right.
popularize.
That's right. It's necessary, but
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'd like to thank you very much for setting time aside to share your story. It as I said, it really fills in a nice piece of our puzzle.
I'm sorry, maybe I haven't been too much help, but
Oh
that's
no.
okay.
No, everybody's peace is important. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.